From the land of the Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 5th day of December, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net. Entomologist from the University of Illinois, Nick Sider, will be here on this World Soil Health Day to talk about the interaction between soil health, conservation practices, and insect management. Then, as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast too with Mark Russo at Everstream Analytics, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day at $6.40.5, down 5 3/4. The May at $6.42.25, a nickel lower. And December of next year down 2 3/4 at $5.95.25. January soybeans at $14.37 3/4, 3/4 cent lower. The March at $14.45, down 1 1/2. And November soybeans one lower at $13.76 3/4 cent. Bean meal at $4.32.10, up $8. And the bean oil for the day at $62.57, $2.65 lower. Wheat futures soft red at $7.39, down 22 cents. The hard red finished the day at 29 lower at $8.41 3/4. Live cattle futures finished Chicago nearby at 155.82 1/2. That's the February, actually, down a nickel for the day. Feeders at 183.77 1/2, and the most active up $1.32 1/2. Then the lean hogs at $90.52 1/2, a dime higher on the afternoon. Crude oil at $70 to $7.07 a barrel, down $2.91. Diesel fuel or heating oil 17 1/2 lower, $2.99 3/10. And gasoline on the Arbob at $2.20 3/10 a cent, down 7 7/10 of a cent for the day. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at agmarket.net to discuss what happened in Chicago. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, good afternoon. Glad to be here. But boy, not a very good day market-wise. Just total meltdown. Just not a whole lot of buying interest here to start out the week here.
Well, tell me what happened and why this has taken place. I suppose the Dow's off some 500 points at this hour.
Yeah, at the present time, we got some weaker stock indexes. The dollar is actually up about 80, but the Dow is down 500. S&Ps are down about 84. The gold market down over $30 an ounce. Energy crude oil down 280 a barrel. Heat and oil down over 1,500 points. Natural gas down 600 points. So it's just all risk off and reversal here. And, you know, a little concerned about world economies. Talk a little bit about OPEC production increases. So just overall, red line going below the green line pretty well captured trade's interest here today. Same thing in the grain complex. It seemed like last week we moved below some support levels, and it's been just very little buying interest in the marketplace. Fundamentally, the Southern Hemisphere continues to be front and center here. The forecast kind of flip-flops back and forth, but for the most part, the trade's kind of dialed in that there's going to be some possibilities of some better precip in the drier regions. Northern regions continue to see some fairly decent rain patterns, so they're in fairly good shape. Demand-wise, we're just not seeing some big sales come at us. We did see today 130,000 ton bean sell to China, but we're not seeing that 500,000 or 1 million metric ton sales being announced. Export shipments today shipped out 12 million bushels of wheat. That's at the upper end of expectation. Shipped out 20 million bushels of corn. That's kind of the middle of the trade expectations. Soybean shipments with about 63 million bushels. So we are shipping out what we're selling for the most part. As we move through the week here, we'll continue to monitor the South American forecast, of course. We'll continue to monitor the daily demand picture. Then towards the end of the week here, we'll see that monthly supply demand report come out. And of course, traditionally, we won't see real changes in U.S. production. The concern or thing they would maybe address would be the demand side of the equation here. Some of the trade is kind of concerned that the ending stocks could kind of start inching higher here if this demand picture doesn't pick up. But you got to remember, we're still early in the marketing year here. Marketing year does not end till August 31st. September 1st is the new start of the new marketing year, so we have plenty of time to make some sales and get some grain shipped out. So a lot of zigging and zagging in front of us. Right now, the trend's lower here. And instead of moving higher into mid-December, what I was kind of hoping for, looking for, it looks like we're kind of moving a little bit lower into mid-December, Todd.
A couple of follow-up questions. Was volume bigger this week, today that is, than it was last week? I know you're concerned that things were fairly light, and that adds to some volatility usually.
Today's volume was somewhat on the light side for Monday, particularly here. We'll continue to monitor that, but probably what's probably more important is the open interest. We need to see if we're getting confirmation that we're starting to see or continue to see these funds lighten up on the long side on corn and beans. Then they've been adding to their short position in the wheat. Wheat's been a big thing here as far as technically we failed to hold those last August lows. And fundamentally, we're still watching the Western Wheat Belt where they're continuing in a dry situation. So it's a combination of things, fundamentals and technicals, but we've got to kind of watch that open interest and see if it increases or decreases according to which price direction we go.
Sometimes at this time of the year, banks, other managed money funds tend to rebalance. Is that happening as well?
I think we're starting to see, well, as far as major rebalance, we probably won't see that till a little later on in here through here. I think what we're seeing right now is just some technical signals or trend following signals or program signals, just give them some price direction or buy-sell signals to follow in through here. But that will be the thing here as we move forward here to see if the sector wants to maintain, especially the index funds, they want to maintain a significant long position in the grain complex. The regular commodity funds do like to hold some long positions going into the growing season with the idea that we get in the growing season, if we do see some weather concerns, they'll turn around and sell that to the public coming in late in the session.
Given that the trade is being driven on the technical side, as you say, there's a low volume, relatively speaking, that increases volatility. Might we see a point at which there's a bottom reached fairly quickly and things turn around?
The time, you know, when and where, yeah, that's a tough one to figure. But as the trade continues to follow these moving averages and accumulate the sell programs on the sell side. And as you interview everybody throughout the week, if you take a tally there, as more and more turn bearish, that's probably the signal it's time we've got a low in place, Todd.
All right. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
No, we've got kind of a holiday type of trade in through here. And I think as we move forward in through here, we got to continue to focus on this 23 corn below $6 is a little bit concerning. A lot of guys are optimistic. We got some high inputs commitments going in this 23 crop. So might want to still continue to look at some price floors in here until we get in the spring.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Very good. Take care.
Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. One other note before we turn our attention to other places. On Friday, USDA will release the December WASDE or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. Those will be out at 11 a.m. Central Time.
Music.
It's World Soil Health Day. Nick Sider now joins us. He is an entomologist with the University of Illinois Extension and extensively uses IPM, Integrated Pest Management, in the concepts that he tries to teach farmers. And I asked him how that all worked into good soil health as well, especially as it might relate to cover crops.
I do projects on a variety of insect pests in corn and soybean. A lot of my work is focused on the corn rootworm, which is the most economically important pest of corn in Illinois. Also do some work looking at the impact of cover crops on insect pest management in Illinois. We have a current project that's part of a large regional protocol looking at termination timing of cereal rye ahead of corn and what impact that has on insect pest pressure as well as on weeds and diseases. Did a similar project on soybean over the last few years. So in soybean, we found that the risk of insect damage to that crop was relatively low following a cereal rye cover crop. And we expect the risk to be a little bit higher in corn, simply because there are more insects that make that jump from rye, a grass, over to corn, another grass crop. So really interested in the impact of cover crop termination timing on how likely you are to see insect pest damage in corn in particular.
How is it, Nick, that soil health and other conservation practices, things like cover crops, influence insect activity? What considerations should be taken?
So when you look at the effect of conservation practices and especially cover crops on insect pests, certainly they do have an effect, as you might imagine. That effect is going to depend in large part on the species of cover crop that you're talking about, and then the species of the crop as well. And it also might depend on a variety of other environmental factors, including temperature, moisture, the sorts of conditions that we have, especially early in the season. We find that cover crops can favor certain beneficial insect species, ground beetles in particular, some of the ground-dwelling predators that we have. They can favor some pest insects as well. For instance, if you're using a rye cover crop, like many farmers in Illinois are, you are more likely to see armyworm damage following that rye cover crop. Depending on your residue management, you may be more likely to see slug damage following that, especially if you get into a situation where you have a lot of ground cover and a lot of moisture. In terms of considerations a farmer should take, especially if they're adopting a new practice, would be to take a few extra scouting trips, especially early in the season, just to see if there's any damage out there that you're not used to seeing. The sorts of pests that you might see are going to depend in large part on your geography, even within the state, on what sorts of local situation you're in terms of field history and that kind of thing. Overall, the risk of early season insect damage in Illinois is pretty low, and that's whether you have a cover crop or not. But again, this can increase the risk of certain pest issues, especially if we talk about a cover crop that's closely related to that cash crop. So for instance, if you have a grass cover crop and you're planting corn, that's going to be a higher risk situation than for instance, if you're planting cereal rye ahead of soybean, which is our most common cover crop system in Illinois. Similarly, you know, if you plant a clover or a vetch ahead of soybean, you could get into some unique pest issues there from insects like stink bugs and cutworms, for instance, that might cross over from that clover to another legume, a soybean. So highly dependent on the system, highly dependent on the year. The best thing that you can do, especially early on, when you're just starting to adopt a cover crop system, would be to be vigilant. Now, similar, if we talk about conservation practices, if you're in no-till, for instance, the pest complex that you're going to see in a no-till system is going to be a little bit different than you see in a conventional till system. Not necessarily better, not necessarily worse, but different. And so, for instance, if you're in no-till, you're more likely to see an insect like Dectus stemborer, for instance, in your soybean crop. You're more likely to see black cutworm in those systems in general, especially if you combine a no-till system with spotty control of winter annuals in the spring. So just keep in mind, when we alter something in the system, it does alter pest management, but the main thing is to be vigilant, to scout early in the season, and to identify any insect problems that come up when you still have time to do something about it, when you still have time to apply control in those rare cases where it's needed in Illinois.
Can you maybe discuss a bit more what the current research is saying about the conservation practices, for instance, that are being deployed by producers, no-till, and or the soil health practices that they might be using, and what influence they have on IPM or integrated pest management?
What we've found by and large is that while there is, you know, you are more likely to see certain insect pests following a cereal rye cover crop, it's not that high of a risk, particularly in soybean, and particularly if you're talking about a grass cover crop ahead of soybean. So does it increase the risk of seeing some chewing early in the season? Yeah. Particularly from armyworm, you're more likely to see that early in the season following a rye cover crop. Is armyworm a big problem in soybean? Generally, no. No, it isn't. The species that we're seeing early in the season here, the true armyworm, that's different, mind you, from fall armyworm that we had quite an outbreak of this past year. But with that true armyworm that often shows up in those cereal rye cover crops, they don't feed particularly effectively on soybean. They don't survive well on it. And generally, they're not going to cause stand loss in that system. So overall, the risk of insect activity following a cover crop in Illinois, especially in soybean where we have the most results, it's relatively low. And certainly I wouldn't say, when you talk about your IPM decision making, insect management would not be the first thing I think about if I'm deciding whether or not to put in a cover crop or another conservation practice. The first thing I'm going to think about is the agronomics, the benefits you're trying to get from that, the agronomic risks that might be associated with that practice. That would be my first consideration. In terms of insect pest management, yeah, there are problems that can happen, but they're problems that can be managed, problems that can be mitigated, especially if those fields are scouted properly. Typically, you're able to identify any early season damage while you still have time to do something about it. The controls for most of our early season insect pests, if you get them out there in time, you can control them effectively, like with an early season well-timed insecticide application, not an insecticide that's just going out just because at the time you put a herbicide down, but an insecticide that's going out when that pest is out there at an economic threshold in a susceptible stage for management. So really, insect management shouldn't be your primary concern when deciding whether or not to adopt one of these soil health promoting practices. But you should make a point in those fields to just be a little more vigilant, especially if you're new to the practice, to get out there a few times early in the season and see what you've got in terms of stand, see if you're seeing any stand loss from insect pests. One thing to note there, early in the season, in both corn and soybean, a little bit of chewing in general at that time of year isn't going to have an impact on yield. It's not really going to affect you. It's not until you have stand threatened from these early season insect pests that you're really losing bushels because of that. So that's something to keep in mind when we look at managing insect pests early, not just in those fields that follow a cover crop or some other soil health promoting practice, but in all of your fields, really.
Nick Sider is a field crops extension entomologist with the University of Illinois. He was discussing the interaction of IPM, integrated pest management, in conservation and soil health improvement practices. Let's check in on the agricultural weather forecast now with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us. Begin here in the United States. Things remain droughty in the southwestern part of the U.S. What are conditions like today?
Yeah, continue to be more of the same in areas of the plains, and some of that extends out towards California as well. And looking ahead here for the next week or two, still not seeing any sign of any kind of major improvement here. There's a little bit of light precip, but no improvement is expected in the drought conditions across the plains. So kind of status quo there.
Any issues for the middle part of the country over the next couple of weeks?
Not seeing anything that major here, although a little more rain to actually help improve, continue improving the river levels here on the Mississippi, but nothing that looks exceptionally wet or, for that matter, exceptionally snowy here in the nation's midsection.
Some of the most drought-stricken areas of Argentina have gotten a little rainfall. That improved conditions, I don't suppose, by a whole lot. What do you think will come for them over the next couple of weeks?
Well, kind of a mixed bag for Argentina coming up. The next 4 to 5 days is still very hot and very dry across the region with limited rain activity. However, over the upcoming weekend, the first half of next week, temperatures are going to start cooling down a bit, and that's going to also begin to open up the door for better rainfall prospects. It's looking like actually about a 5 to 6 day window of unsettled and stormy conditions across Argentina, something that they haven't seen in numerous weeks. So after what's the next 4 to 5 days of likely decreasing crop conditions, then there'll be some stabilization with those rains about a week from now.
And if you move further north into Brazil, are there places there that are having trouble at all?
Well, we've seen portions of southern Brazil and center-west Brazil have a very dry November. That was after better rainfall throughout the month of October. So that's putting more emphasis on rain activity picking back up again across Brazil. And we're seeing that. In fact, over the weekend, we saw rain activity begin to increase across center west Brazil as well as in the southern Brazil. And that trend looks to continue, Todd, here over the next couple of weeks. The one area where there's maybe a little more uncertainty as to how much improvement will take place, that's Rio Grande do Sul in far southern Brazil.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Then Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics and joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media.